Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action.
Hey, everybody, it's Diane at Someone Gets Me, and I have a great interview for you today. I have an amazing woman. Her name is Alder Allensworth, and she's in Tampa, Florida. And I already have interviewed her on the Sailing Legends podcast, and we've traveled in some of the same circle sailings for years and years and years. But I'm just now getting to know her, and boy, is she amazing. So I asked her to come and share some of her wisdom with you here today on Someone Gets Me. Alder has enough cool experience that it would take me forever to read her bio, so I'm going to put it in the show notes. But here's the Cliff Note version. She is an amazing writer. She's a counselor and a nurse, and she's a sailor like no other. She has 3 decades, probably a little bit more than that now, of really working with people to help them reach their highest potential from counseling and coaching and every kind of way you can think. So as a very skilled, amazing, multi-potentialite visionary, I have invited Alder onto the show so that she can talk to you about how she got where she is and how she has made it through all of the different hoops and ups and downs of her life to bring to us an amazing vision. So welcome to the show, Alder.
Oh, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here, Diane.
I'm so happy that you're here. There's so many things I want to talk about, but let's start a little bit with, you've been in this helping profession for a long time in lots of different ways. So can you give us a little backstory? Like, how did it get to the point where you started deciding you were going to help people or serve people? How did that all come about when you were younger?
Well, I'm the oldest child. My father was in the military. My mom had some physical issues. So I think I was born into helping people. And it just has kind of continued my whole life. I did read a book when I was a teenager because I struggled some as a teen. And the book pointed me also, I don't know if people remember it now, The Outsiders, I think was the name of it, about the 3 boys that whose parents had died and the oldest one was bringing them up. And it was a great book back in the, 60s, 70s. And that inspired me to try and make a difference in people's lives.
Oh, wow. That's really amazing. I bet that person who wrote that book never really would know that you and probably many others were touched in that way, mm-hmm. that really helped inspire you. And of course, as the oldest child, that's part of the deal, right? Let's see what we can do for others. So tell me how your career started. What did you start with first, and how did you know what to do?
I still don't know what to do. I loved music. My father was in the military, so we moved every 2-3 years. And music was the one consistent, and the one consistent that kept me in a social circle, because you were with band or an orchestra or singing in choir. So it was the one place I fit in. I realized in college that there was no way I could be a professional musician. I just did not have that gift. But I had the gift of making a difference and helping people. And so I went into music therapy. And music therapy took me down the road of helping kids, particularly adolescents, who had been through really tough times. And I worked with adolescents for quite a few years. And then as I got older, I decided that I wanted to do something different. And hospice was calling me. Mm-hmm. Also, music therapy, while a wonderful, wonderful modality, it's not really reimbursed by a lot of insurances. So to maintain being able to have a job, I went ahead and got my license as a counselor in the state of Florida. Went into hospice and loved hospice work. Just found my niche there. and worked for hospice for over 12 years, then took a detour, fell in love, got married, moved to Tampa, left hospice, started working for a lawyer in elder law. And he said, would you become a financial planner? So I said, sure, why not, you know? So I went to school and got my certification as a financial planner and helped out with people making end-of-life planning, which was sort of what I was doing in hospice too. So it all dovetailed together. My folks were nearing the end of their lives. And I realized that I wanted to get back into healthcare, that financial planning wasn't quite my niche. So I went and got an RN so I could stay viable in the healthcare field. And now I'm working as a nurse, working as a health counselor and a health coach, and writing, being an author.
Wow. So how did the writing get added into all of this?
Well, we talked about it on the other podcast a little bit. In 2000, I was asked to sail a 12-foot boat from St. Pete to Camden, Maine, to raise money and awareness for sailors with disabilities. In 1990, I was diagnosed with cancer. So in 2000, that was my 10-year cancer anniversary. So I did. I got in this little tiny 12-foot boat and started sailing, took off by myself, but it was followed by CNN. The trip was followed by CNN, quite high profile. And I got to Morehead City, North Carolina, and just realized this is crazy. I've got to go back to Clearwater and help people with disabilities get on the water. What am I doing out here sailing by myself? I could be spending my time a whole lot better helping other people sail, especially people with disabilities. So came back to Clearwater, started the program Sailability Greater Tampa Bay with a group of fabulous, fabulous people, the city of Clearwater, Sand Key, oh my gosh, Custom Mobility. So many people just came together to make this happen. It was just fabulous. Fast forward, I started taking care of my parents. My mom passed away in 2010. My dad had a stroke in 14 and moved in with us. And he didn't need full-time care, but I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't leave him alone. So I had this time and I quit my job to care for him. So what do you do when you're sitting around wondering and you can't leave the house? And I'd always wanted to write the book of the Prevail trip. And I had wanted to share the strategies that I went through are my story and my journey through cancer. I had had several people ask me about that. And a friend of mine said, one of the motivations to write a book is getting pissed. And
well, there you go.
It motivates you. And I had gone to this cancer support group and I'm hearing people say, so the doctor told me when you get the lung metastasis, when it goes to your lungs, that don't worry, that it's slow growing. You'll live for a while with it in your lungs. And I was just like, what do you mean when it goes to your lungs? I said, at that point I was 26 years cancer free, something like that. And I said, that's never happened to me. I've never had a metastasis. And they just looked at me and said, well, you're a little abnormal there. And we laughed. But I said, isn't that a self-fulfilling prophecy? If a doctor tells you this is going to happen, I don't know if I go along with that. And we talked a while. And I thought, that just really kind of ticks me off. Because you don't have to have lung metastasis. Not everybody gets them. Some of us don't. So I decided to write the book. I hope all that made sense. I feel like I was wandering all over the place.
No, you're making perfect sense. And it's just so interesting because it's kind of like when you're a helper person by nature and you're already on that field and then you run into a support group where in my world, it's relatively ignorant, those kinds of comments. And so, of course, that's going to get that little ire within you going. Mm-hmm. And okay, I have to put a message out there that has more hope and more awareness to it than this, because this is so unaware. So it makes perfect sense to me. I understand it more now than I did before. So yes.
And I, you know, ignorance kind of a harsh word, because I don't feel as though the people who have the cancer are ignorant, but it just kind of bothers me that the medical profession would lay that on people.
Yes. That's who I meant was ignorant. Not the.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure. Yes.
I believe that in our culture, we have this mindset around lots of things, disabilities, cancer, addiction, mental health, and name it, it doesn't matter, that we have this mindset that it has to take a certain course, or it's always this certain way. And there's never allowed to be any variance or variation. And you just might as well expect it. And I don't believe that. I believe that everybody's different, and that our mindset plays a big role in it and what we're doing to take care of ourselves. And so yes, to that point, I think that our culture has a great deal of ignorance, because people have kind of like bought into this thinking style and paradigm that has been proven to be incorrect over and over and over again.
I agree. You don't, may not necessarily go down a traditional path or the probability path. There are people that get better, and we don't know always why. We can guess and speculate. And I agree with you. A lot of it has to do with attitude and drive and determination and belief system.
Yes. So has there been any time, this is kind of going to be a goofy question probably, but has there been any time in your life where you kind of looked around and thought, nobody around here understands me, like they just aren't getting me?
I would say most of my growing up years, because my father was military. We moved every 2 years. And I would go to a school where everybody knew each other for years. And I was always the new kid. Always the new kid. And I felt like I was always having to prove myself. Always trying to fit in. Always being different. I always felt different. And it took me a long time. It was probably the sailing and some of the music where I felt a little bit of acceptance and a little bit of my niche. It's followed me most of my life. Yes.
Yes. A lot of the people who listen to this podcast report that, you know, it's kind of like some people have even said things like, you know, I almost felt like I was an alien at certain points. Like nobody really saw the world the way I did and couldn't really see it. And they felt kind of alone in that sense. So do you ever struggle with overthinking?
All the time. Is that one of those other markers of this?
It's one of the most common things that people who listen to the podcast ask me to have my guests speak about, and that is overthinking. So by the look on your face and that giggle, you understand it. You overthink. So how do you help yourself with that? How do you help yourself not like overthink yourself into a jam, you know?
People call me, you're the most organized, most prepared person I've ever met. And I keep blaming it on sailing. You know, you're going offshore. You got to think about this possibility and that possibility and prepare for this and prepare for that. And oh my goodness. I don't know if I told you, I walked the Camino de Santiago a couple of years ago.
No, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah. It is a pilgrimage across northern Spain. It's been walked for well over 1,000 years, and it's 500 miles. You start in southern France and go to Santiago de Compostela, and talk about overthinking. Before I went on that trip, you carry everything on your back. And what a good lesson for me, because not only am I the oldest and a sailor to be prepared, I was a Girl Scout. You know, you got to be prepared. So I was just like, well, I have to have this just in case. I have to have this just in case. And then I'm going to have to stay here, and I'm going to stay there, and I need to make reservations here, and I need to make reservations there. And I was just, and do I have the right shoes and do I have the right clothes and everything. And a couple of friends of mine said, you know, everything you take, you've got to carry on your back. And the more you carry, the harder it's going to be. You need to just stop overthinking and let go. And let go of stuff and let go and allow the pilgrimage to evolve. And that's what the Camino is all about. So I dumped a lot of things out of my pack. Friends helped me. Got it down to about 15 pounds. It was still a little heavier than probably it should have been, because by the time I was done, there was about three or four more pounds of stuff that I didn't really have to take. And that experience has helped me so much, not just about carrying the stuff, but trusting the universe to be there and to provide. Down to, this is the craziest story. So right before I leave, we're hearing that Barcelona, that area in Spain, is wanting to secede from the country. And they had just voted that they're going to secede from Spain. And I'm flying into Barcelona and I hear there's riots in the street and all sorts of stuff. I'm like, oh, great. Here I'm flying to a foreign country. I don't know the language much and there's riots. So I'm on the plane and as we're getting ready to land, I'm talking to the young woman next to me and she says, oh, I just got a text. I guess we had landed. We're taxiing. I just got a text from my husband. All the metros are down and only certain trains are running. And I was just like, oh no, how am I going to get to Pamplona? How am I going to get to the train station? How am I going to navigate this? And she said, you know, I live close to the train station. Why don't we share a taxi? I'll make sure you get to the train station safely. Mm. I mean, incredible. I was put right next to the right person who could help me. And that's the biggest thing that I have learned. Gosh, it's a lesson I've had to learn a bunch of times. It keeps kind of being hit me over the head because I tend to overthink still to a certain extent. But I believe I let go and trust the universe a whole lot more now.
So it's a process, right? It's like a growth process. And when it happens, when we trust and let go and something, you know, happens that almost feels magical, but that's the way it is, yeah, you know, then it lingers. And then pretty soon we're start overthinking again. And you know, we have to keep relearning that lesson, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I think when something's so ingrained, we have to practice it.
So what goes with that for me then is that learning the lesson of bringing everything from all in our head to down into our heart and our spirit too, and letting our heart lead more than our head. And from listening to you and these neat experiences, it seems like you've done a lot of work that way and know how to do that. So if somebody was only in their head, they were kind of cut off in their head and they're not in their heart, what would be something you would suggest for them to start trying to do to kind of wake up their body so that their body and their emotions and their head could be aligned?
Well, there's definitely some energy work that you can do to connect your heart and your head, and some energy techniques, which are wonderful to kind of realign that, because I believe we shut that off. And whether it's meditating on your heart chakra, spending some time listening to your heart, being quiet, and then start playing with it. Like if I have the impulse to do something and I know that it's not something that would cause irreparable damage or hurt anybody else or anything, I'm going to try it. I'm going to go do it. I'm not going to say, oh, that's ridiculous. Why should I do that? That doesn't fit into my daily plan and my daily schedule, which is kind of how my brain would go. Mm. It would be like, oh, you know, I just really, really just want to go to the park. I know I have all this work to do. I know I have all these things to do, and I know I have all these schedules, but something's telling me that I have to go to the park. So I say, okay, just listen to it. go to the park, and sometimes the magic happens.
Ooh, so trusting that part. That's very cool. I like that suggestion. That's really exciting.
Yeah, that was kind of the Camino. I was trying to get there for 3 years. And finally, the right time came and it worked out. And it was the perfect time for me.
Oh, that's wonderful. So did you walk all 500 miles of it?
Yes.
Wow. How long did that take?
36 days. I had 3 lay days during that time.
Wow.
And talk about trusting. I got Pilgrim's Revenge out there. I think they call it Montezuma's Revenge in Mexico. Same thing. Pretty miserable. I ended up at this little hotel thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. I'm going to have to go back to the States. I can't finish walking. I'm never going to accomplish this. They said, there's a clinic next door. Went to the clinic. They were like, oh, it's Pilgrim's Revenge. Just eat some broth and bananas and yogurt. You'll be better in about 24 hours. The people at the hotel said, we'll fix you broth. Let's go out and give you some bananas. And these are the people that own the hotel. And they just took care of me. And I went out and I kept walking. And I made it to Santiago. But it's just that kind of, in fact, I lost your question a minute ago. Totally lost where we were going. But
oh, that's fabulous. So what was one of the big lessons you learned on that trip?
To trust. Trust that intuition. And to stop being so scheduled. I started walking with a woman who, my gosh, she would put mountain goats to shame. I just couldn't keep up with her. And I tried, and my feet were getting blistered. And I just had to go my own pace and do my own thing. And when I did that, the people I met and the things that happened were just astounding. So I believe just really listening, paying attention to your body, you know, your body tells you to slow down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if I start hitting a lot of traffic lights, you know, stop lights, I go, uh-oh, I've been moving too fast. What are all these stop lights meaning? Maybe I need to stop a minute and apply that to my whole life, not just to the car drive, but to my life.
That's a great lesson. You know, it's funny because just actually this morning I was driving to work and it's usually a 17-minute ride at the maximum. Mm-hmm. And today it took almost 40 minutes because every road I was on, I was directly behind a vehicle moving 15 or 20 miles an hour. No wrecks, no heavy traffic, no school zones. One of them was a school bus, but it was not a school zone. And the speed limits are like 35, 45, and most of the roads I take. But I was going no faster than 20, almost the entire trip.
Wow.
And at first I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And then people, when the road would get to a 4-lane road, somebody would come up from behind and then sit in my blind spot so I couldn't get over. I mean, it was just crazy the whole way. So I finally just turned on some really good spiritual music and said, well, get there when I get there, having a good time along the way. And I laughed because I have been moving really fast, getting things ready for my retreat and getting ready for things coming up. And it was a delightful way to open the sunroof, enjoy the Florida morning breeze, and have some nice spiritual time while I was navigating my way to work. And I'm certain 30 or so years ago, I wouldn't have felt that way.
You have learned the lesson.
Yes. So it was when you're telling that story, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so true. Yes. So I'd like to talk a little bit about music therapy, because I know a lot of people who, I know a lot of sound healers or massage therapists who use sound in different ways. Mm-hmm. So could you please share a little bit about the kind of music therapy that you do? Like, what is it like? And how does it differ, or is it the same from people who do like sound therapy with crystal bowls and things like that, or is it the same thing?
I think music therapy has become very wide. Mm-hmm. And there is a degree of music therapy, like a bachelor's degree and a certification and a board certification. master's degree. In fact, I got my master's degree in music therapy. So you have a very traditional route. Then there are people who, I guess, have a little more non-traditional route and use music within their work, such as people who use singing bowls or massage therapists or yoga instructors who put on music, or even your aerobics teachers pick out the right music to energize you, to keep you going in that heart going, and then to bring you back down. So a lot of different people use music in a lot of ways to affect change in behavior, and they may not really realize it. For me, I started off in rehab, working with people, mostly older people who had had strokes, and people who have strokes that have affected the left side of their brain, where the speech center is, who cannot talk. They can understand, but they can't put the words out there. A lot of them can still sing. So I would get people singing, and there's something about when you start to sing and you start singing the old songs. I'll never forget this lady. She had been a preacher. She had had a massive stroke. The left side of her body didn't work well. She couldn't speak, but I got her to singing the old hymns. And we started singing, and this one hand was like she was going to be clapping. All of a sudden, I heard a clap. I'm playing the piano, and I glance over. The other hand had come out of the sling, and she's clapping both hands. And I mean, I didn't want to stop playing because I didn't want it to stop, but I was just astounded. And it was just so automatic. It was like she totally bypassed that conscious of, I can't use that anymore, and just transcended to another level. Now, after we finished singing, the arm was not as useful as the other arm, but it was the start of a rehab for her. And it gave her hope because it's like, wow, that happened. Well, maybe I can get something back. Maybe some more will come back. So there's that. I did a lot of work with teenagers, teaching them to play music instruments to build self-esteem. I'm talking about severely emotionally disturbed teens, kids who have been horribly abused, kids with psychiatric diagnosis like schizophrenia, manic depressive, kids who have just really been hurt. So teaching them a music instrument, teaching them to play together in a band and socialize with each other. And how do you play together? How do you listen to each other? How do you let this one have their turn and then you have your turn? You know, all those basic skills that we just kind of learned when we were little, because of the way these kids were brought up, they never had a chance to learn. So we would do it through music, which was a whole lot more fun than sitting in a classroom being told, now do this and now do that. You know, when you're playing a music instrument, and that's a lot of fun. I did a lot of guided imagery in music, helping people learn to relax and helping them to get in touch with their inner self and who that person is and grow some inner strength. I guess getting that, sourcing themselves inside, getting some self-control. Does that make sense?
You're making perfect sense. And I love that it's like how I'm listening to you and I'm imagining all the different groups of people that have these growth and transcendent type experiences that transcend whatever the label is or whatever the current problem is, where music tends to elevate the spirit, it sounds like, and elevate them to that place where they can feel really free in that moment. And then that's where there's like energy for the healing. And that's what I keep hearing from what you're saying.
Now, Dr. Gaston, who is really the father of music therapy, talked about music is most powerful in the group. And I mean, I think about sitting around the campfire as a Girl Scout singing. Mm-hmm. And how powerful that is. Or a church choir singing, or a Philharmonic orchestra. you know, it doesn't have to be a Philharmonic Orchestra. It can be a group of kids starting a beat, you know, on the street corner and starting to jam together, or just sitting around after you've been sailing and people are pulling out guitars and singing. It's just that whole social connectiveness, expression. I don't know. It just transcends words for me. But you know it when you feel it.
Yes, that's amazing. That's so true. That's so true. And so I'm glad you shared a little bit about that, because I think some people don't understand that there's a whole different kind of music therapy other than what seems to be really popular, though that has a great deal of value. When I've worked in psychiatric hospitals, we had music therapists a lot, and they were doing the more traditional type of music therapy, like you're saying, and I saw all kinds of great transformations. Even with among the staff who would be in the room with them, you know, like we would all be participating and we would have these great experiences too. So it transcended like what the role was of the person in the room too. It was very interesting.
Yeah. These kids that I worked with in this long-term treatment center, it was just an incredible treatment program. The psychiatrist who ran it was just far in front of his time. And I had worked there several years and had a really good rapport. And then I was diagnosed with cancer. So I had to leave for a while and had the eye removed and treatment. And the kids made me get well cards. And they all had that song on it, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I thought, what is this about? I mean, I love that song, but I just never thought, you know, of all the songs these kids could, you know, come up with and say, why this one? So when I went back to work, I asked them, you know, what's this with Somewhere Over the Rainbow? And they're like, well, that's your favorite song, isn't it? And I was like, well, yeah, it's one of my favorite songs. And they said, well, every time you sing it, there's just something that happens to you, and we pick that up. So as you say, it's not just the patients, it's also the staff, the teacher. You know, we learn too.
Right.
They taught me a lot.
It's universal in ways that aren't even really always explainable.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that is a great story. I love that. That is really magical. So tell us a little bit about the kind of work you're doing today. How are you letting that inner vision of yours to help people show up in the world now?
Oh my goodness. I am doing several things. I seem to like to do several things at once. First off, I'm working part-time as a nurse, which is wonderful because I go in and I see patients and in their homes. I work as a home care nurse, and I only work 2 to 3 days a week doing that, which I think is wonderful because it prevents me from getting kind of burned out.
Yes.
So I do that. So every time I go in, I'm fresh and I'm ready to do my job. And I think because people can, and I know the listeners can't see me, but I do have one eye. And when patients see that, they know that I've been through something too. And yet I'm in there taking care of them and working. So that gives them hope that they too can get through their physical crisis.
Yes.
Without even having to say it.
Right. It's a visible, obvious fact that you've had to deal with something. And right. So if you can deal with it, maybe they can too.
Right. And then I also do self-care groups and individual coaching for people who are not just overcoming physical issues. I do that too, but also emotional issues and any obstacles, maybe searching for their life's dreams, their life's passions, and helping them remove obstacles through a process called energy psychology. Working with the human body vibrational matrix, working with the chakra systems, the biofield, and the meridian systems in a specific manner to help remove obstacles and then help you become the best you you are. Because a lot of times we're not even really clear on what our goals are, but we know that there's something we're reaching for, but we're just not clear. So, and sometimes that is just because some of our beliefs are blocking that. So if we can address that, get clear, and remove some obstacles, helps people move forward in their life. So I do that. I do self-care groups for people who have been through the loss of someone or through their own illness. And I write, and I have my book out, Prevail, Celebrate the Journey. I have another book will be published by hopefully the mid-October. I'm in the final edits right now. And that's called Celebrate the Journey, Self-Care for Cancer. And this came about through people asking me what my strategies were for self-care. So I've outlined those in this book. It's a booklet. It's only about 50 pages. Easy to read with a lot of experiential things, a lot of exercises you can do.
Oh,
you look like you were going to say something.
No, I'm like going, wow, that's really great. And it's great that you're sharing your strategies in a book that is digestible. And here's what you do. Like, this is the strategy and this is how you do it. Because sometimes I see so many people want to share things and their motive is really good, but it gets so out there or so non-specific that it overwhelms the reader and they never really get to the strategy part. So when you're saying it's 50 pages, here's the strategies, this is what I did to do it, that gives people a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to hear about that great book coming out. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And then I'm having fun with a book. You want to hear another fun story?
Yes.
Okay, we're going back to the Camino. And I was getting ready to go, and I called a couple of people that I knew had gone. So I'm having lunch with my friend Gigi. I met her at hospice. She's a hospice nurse, and she had gone in 2010. So we're having lunch, and she's pulling stuff out of this bag, and she pulls out some euros. She says, here's some extra euros I didn't use. A woman's always got to have something for a phone call, so here's some extra euros, and here's a little cross made out of palm leaves for it was blessed at Palm Sunday. So it doesn't weigh much, but it's blessed and this is for blessings for you. And then she says, I was trying to find my, I guess you call it a sari or a pareo is what she calls it. It's just like a long rectangular piece of cloth you can wrap around you as a dress or use it as a towel or hang it up for a curtain. Just a piece of cloth. She goes, I couldn't find it, but I found this scarf. And this scarf is beautiful. It's a red wool woven scarf. And she pulled it out. She says, I got this on the Camino. A young woman came up to our group, a whole bunch of pilgrims. And she says, oh my gosh, you're speaking American, Americans. And they were like, yeah, who are you? Where are you from? And this, obviously she went a pilgrim. Turned out she was a young woman. She was an en pair, and she was from North Carolina, but had gone to Spain to work and be a nanny for a family for a couple of years. And it was her afternoon off. So she's hanging out with them, listening to, you know, she was so excited to talk to Americans. Well, it got too late. She missed her bus. So Gigi and her friend says, nope, you're spending the night with us in our hotel. And then we'll put you on the bus in the morning. So the girl got up, ran to her bus, and left the scarf in the room. So Gigi says to me, you have to take this scarf back to the Camino. I carried it the rest of the way. I never found the owner again. I never found a place to take it, leave it. So you have to take it back. I said, okay. So I took the scarf back. And it was wonderful because it got cold in those mountains in October, November, crossing those two mountain ranges. Well, I came back having lunch with my next friend, Annie, and I'm pulling out of my pack. I took this, I took that. And Annie's like, okay, you know, this is what I need to take because Annie's getting ready to go on the Camino. I pull out the scarf. I tell her the story of the scarf. And I could see Annie's face like, I want that scarf. I want to take that scarf. She didn't say it, but I could just see it written all over her face. And I was just like, I walked all across Spain with this scarf. I don't want to give this scarf up. This is like special to me. You know, that's what's going on in my head. But I knew in my heart, I had to give it to her. And I said, do you want to take the scarf back to the Camino? Because I couldn't leave it there. I never found a place to leave it. And she said, yes. Annie took it. She successfully walked the 500 miles of the Camino. Then her friend wanted to take the scarf on her Camino. The scarf is now on its sixth Camino, each time with a woman. So this is like the sisterhood of the traveling scarf. And the woman who's got it now on the Camino is at the end. There is a group, two male friends. They were very good friends. And one was in a wheelchair and the other one was able-bodied. And he pushed him across the Camino. And it's a movie called I'll Push You. And it's also a book. It's a true story. This woman is going to go help push people with disabilities the last 100 kilometers with the I'll Push You group, which is now taking people with disabilities and helping them have a Camino experience. Wow. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. So I'm writing the story of the scarf. And she's got the next person. And this woman's from California. I don't know where the scarf is going to end up next, but it's incredible.
That is magical. How magical is that? Oh my. I'm so glad you shared that with all of us.
Yeah, it's like we are so intertwined. Like the scarf is woven and we're all those woven intertwined threads and we're all a part of each other. And we're all here to support each other. And like the scarf, keep each other warm and give each other hope.
That is absolutely magical. I am so glad you thought of that story and you shared it. That's awesome. So I know there's people who are listening to you who are having goosebumps like I am, or at the very least going, whoa, right? And so do you work with people like virtually, like if they're not in Tampa?
Yes. Okay, I can work through Zoom. Yes.
Okay. So that means if you're listening to Alder and you're going, oh my gosh, I have to know her. I have to work with her. I have to connect with her. Then do it. I'm going to put all of her contact information in the show notes for you so that you can contact her. But what an amazing powerhouse of a woman that is like on fire in this really aligned way. I absolutely so admire you and the work you're doing. And I'm even more inspired for my own work just having this conversation with you.
You know, getting back to that overthinking, I think that that sometimes takes us out of the stream that we need to be in. Here I go back to my nautical things. One of my favorite songs in the world is a nursery rhyme. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. And as long as we're gently moving and gently rowing and we're in that stream, we're moving along in the line of our dreams. It's when we start fighting that current or thinking we know more or overthinking things, we kind of get out of the main river and it gets too hard. And believe you me, I have to remind myself, usually when it gets too hard, I get tripped up and I learn and it can be a tough lesson. And it's like, okay, Alder, just get back in the channel, get back on course and just let it flow.
Yes. Yes.
But you got to keep rowing. You've got to keep, you have to put a certain amount of energy into it too.
Yes. Oh, that's great. I've always loved that nursery rhyme and now I love it even more. It's true though.
Yes.
I know we've covered a ton of bases and I could talk to you much longer, but I'm being aware of your time. So is there anything that you wanted to talk about or your heart is saying, I really want to say this to this amazing Someone Gets Me audience that we haven't covered or I haven't asked you about?
Oh boy. I'm just so excited to get to know you and that you get me. and that we've connected. It seems like our worlds have been kind of parallel. And now finally, our rivers are starting to cross and merge a little bit. And that's just so exciting for me. And just thank you so much for allowing me to be part of this.
Oh, it's amazing. I feel like it's mutual. It's like we're both next to paralleling. And now it's like, now we're not as paralleling. It's all coming together in this way that who would have figured it would be through podcasts. So if you're really loving Alder stories, you have to check out the Sailing Legends podcast, which is my third podcast that's out. And Alder is my very first interview. She's episode number 2, actually, on that podcast. And it's live now. I'll put that link in the show note as well. And in that, she talks about her sailing world. And both of us are sailors and have raced sailboats competitively for many, many years. And so we have a lot of common friends and common experiences. And so that was a delightful conversation as well. So if you're enjoying listening to her stories here, there's different and more stories over on the Sailing Legends podcast about her sailing experience.
And I do want to say something to all your listeners, to just know that even if you're in a dark spot right now, you'll come out and just trust that you'll get through it. And that just, there's so many wonderful things that are out there in life. And just trust and know that they'll happen to you too.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. So my last question for you before we end the show is, there's a billboard that you can put any message on it you want. And everybody will be able to see it. What would you want to say?
Oh my goodness. Well, the only thing that kind of hits my mind is something we've talked about. And when I was sailing off in that little boat by myself around the United States, and I get really scared, and I've applied that more and more in my life, when I get to that point of just scared or anxious, or whatever, I start kind of chanting in my head, let go, let God and trust, let go, let God and trust. And it's just kind of my mantra. So I probably put that on a billboard, let go, let God and trust. And God can be any higher power, anything you want it to be.
Oh, I love that. Let go, let God, and trust. That's what Alder's billboard would say. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Diane.
So everybody, you have been listening to Alder Allensworth, an amazing and talented woman that's certainly a multi-potentialite like most of us. So here on Someone Gets Me, we really believe in serving and supporting everyone. So if you've really enjoyed what she's had to say, get in the show notes, send her an email, contact her in a way, and let her know that you really loved her interview and the show. She would love to hear from you, as would I. And in the meantime, keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. Remember, you're a rock star and you're here on purpose with a purpose. So go out there and make some noise and do the good you're meant to do. And until the next episode of Someone Gets Me, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit SomeoneGetsMe.com. Again, thanks for listening.